salutation to Buddha, Bodhisattva, and all the great beings. Namo Bunsi Sijia Moni Fo. Namo Bunsi Sijia Moni Fo. Namo Bunsi Sijia Moni Fo. Namo Guan Sing Pusa. Namo Guan Sing Pusa. Namo Guan Sing Pusa. Namo Pusien Pusa. Namo Pusien Pusa. Namo Pusien Pusa. Namo Fo Pusa. Namo Fo Pusa. Namo Fo Pusa. Arahang Sama Sambuddho Bhagava. Buddhang Bhagavantang Abhivademi. Suakato Bhagavata Dhammo Dhammang Namassami. Supatipanno Bhagavato Savakasango Sanghang Namami. Okay, you can be seated. Then we will turn to page 4 to do the official puja chanting. We will start off with the Vandana, salutation to the Buddha. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhassa. Buddhang Saranang Gacchami. Dhammang Saranang Gacchami. Sanghang Saranang Gacchami. Dutiyampi Buddhang Saranang Gacchami. Dutiyampi Dhammang Saranang Gacchami. Dutiyampi Sanghang Saranang Gacchami. Tatiyampi Buddhang Saranang Gacchami. Tatiyampi Dhammang Saranang Gacchami. Tatiyampi Sanghang Saranang Gacchami. Panatipata Viramani Sikha Padang Samadhiyami. Adinadana Viramani Sikha Padang Samadhiyami. Kamesu Michachara Viramani Sikha Padang Samadhiyami. Musawada Viramani Sikha Padang Samadhiyami. Surameraya Majapamadatana Viramani Sikha Padang Samadhiyami. We will now chant the Padipa Puja or offering of light. Ganna Sarapaditena Dipena tamandang sina tilokadipang sambedang pujayami tamonudang ganda sambarayutena dupena hang sugang hina pujaye pujaniyang tang puja bajana mutemang. Vanna ganda guno petang etang kasuma santatin pujayami munindasa Siri pada sarorohe puje mi bedang kesumena nena penena metena cehotu mokang pupang milayati yata idang me kayo tata yati winasa bawang adivase tuno bante paniyang parikapitang anukampang upadaya patigang hotu mutemang. Okay, now turn to page 18. We will do the puja aspiration. We are understanding the significance of all this puja offering. Understanding the significance of offering of light, we shall make the following aspiration. May this offering of light to the Buddha brings forth the causes and conditions to illuminate our mind and help arise the needed clarity and understanding to dispel all darkness or ignorance therein. Significance of offering of water. May this offering of pure, clear, cool water lead us to the pure, clear Dhamma that cools and doses off the fire of all defilements within our mind. Significance of offering of incense. May our morality, virtue, and understanding shine forth and white, just like the fragrance of this incense, which we are offering to the Blessed One, who is perfect in wisdom and virtue. Significance of offerings of fruits. May this offering of fruits remind us of the Dana Parami of generosity and the fruit of our karma, so that we will diligently strive on with heedfulness to attain the path and fruition soonest possible. Significance of offering of flower. May this constantly offering of flowers to the Blessed One strengthen our faith and constantly remind us of the impermanence of this body, so that we will diligently and sincerely strive on to cultivate sila, samadhi, and panya, leading to the ultimate liberation, the bond-free nibbana. Making of overall aspiration. By the power of all these merits born of this offering, may our spiritual faculties of sada, virya, sati, samadhi, and panya be further strengthened until they become balas or powers, sharing and transfer of merits to all beings. May these merits be shared and transferred to all beings without exception, especially to those who have the condition and affinity to receive them. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, we shall pay respect to Triple Gem. Bedang Pajem. Damang pujemi, Sanghang pujemi. Okay, you can be seated, and we can have our meditation. Just before I forget, remember this weekend, Sunday, house dana at Michael Lu's house. So if you are free, try to make it. It's the first time we are having there, so it will be very wholesome. And Michael has been a very strong supporter of Kayanamita. Then also Sito and her, together with her family, they have been very generous and help out in many ways. In fact, both the Rupang, our Kuan Yin and the Buddha Rupang, came from his condition. Come, join us. Susan and England. You all know this Sunday house dana at Michael, Lou and Sito's house. So try to join us because it will be very wholesome. Then also they are very strong in their faith, very sincere, especially Michael. He was my Alastair schoolmate. We are actually very close while we were in Alastair, our kampong nearby. Then because of affinity, over the many, many years, we didn't really meet. Then only recently, the last 2 years, I think. 1 year plus, to be exact. So when condition arise, things will happen. Then when things happen, it happen for a good reason. So if you know how to develop that understanding, then it can go a long way to actually benefit a lot of us. So all these conditions come about because of some very, very good past affinity and parami of most Kayanamita. So tonight, this is the message. So you can try your best to attend. So we will now have our meditation. I will off the light. Then we can have, today good. We can have half an hour. We got a lot of time. Okay.
Thank you.
For those who still wants to meditate, you can continue. For those who have now, slowly, mindfully, come out of meditation. Yeah. We will now do the invocation to the devas. Turn to page 6. I will read the English translation. Yeah. Then after that, we will chant the Pali. Yeah. Invocation to the devas. In this universe, in their entirety, let the deities or devas come here. Let them hear the good doctrine of the King of Sages, which gives heaven and release Nibbana. This is the time to listen to the doctrine. This is the time to listen to the doctrine. This is the time to listen to the doctrine. Samanta Chakavalesu Atra Gacchantu Devata Saddhammang Munirajasa Sunantu Sakamokkalang Dhamma Savanan Kalo Ayang Bandhata Dhamma Savanan Kalo Ayang Bandhata Dhamma Savanan Kalo Ayang Bandhata Namo Atasa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhasa Namo Atasa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhasa Namo Atasa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhasa Iti peso bhagava arahang samma sambuddho Vijacarana sampanno sugato lokavido Anuttaro purisa dhamma sarati Sata deva manusanang buddho bhagavati Swakato bhagavata dhammo Sanditiko akaliko Ehi paseko Opanayiko Pachatang veditatbo Vinohiti Supatipanno bhagavato savakasango Ujupatipanno bhagavato savakasango Nyayapatipanno bhagavato savakasango Samichipatipanno bhagavato savakasango Yadidang chattari risayokani Ata purisa pugala Esa bhagavato savakasango Ahuneyo pahuneyo Dakeneyo anjali karaneyo Anuttarang punyaketang Lokasati Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, let's pay respect mindfully to Triple Jump. Budang Pujami. Dhammang Pujami. Sanghang Pujami. Okay. Just relax yourself. Then maintain some form of attention. Eh? So tonight, before we start the Diamond Sutta, eh, I just want to go through this salutation to the Sangha with you all. Eh? I think we seldom go through this one, so that you can understand the significance of this particular salutation which the Buddha advised all the monks at that time to recite. So as cultivator of the way, we should also develop clear understanding. In Pali, it's called Sangha Vandana. Vandana is salutation. Salutation to the Sangha. Because these are the triple gem that you take refuge. That's why you must develop this understanding. Then when you pay homage or take refuge, and when you chant the salutation, we chant with understanding. So this word, Supatipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho. Savaka Sangho is always repeated. Sangho is the Sangha. Savaka means the enlightened disciple of the Buddhas. Savakas are enlightened beings. They call them the sound hearer. Upon hearing the sutta, they awaken to the way. So they are called savaka. The English translation is, of good conduct is the order of the disciple of the blessed one. Actually, the English translation is not that precise. Order of the enlightened disciple of the blessed one. So the first virtue or noble quality of the enlightened disciple of the Buddha is they have very good conduct. So of good conduct means they develop understanding of life. They understand the nature's law that governs life and existence. They manifest beautiful conducts, good conduct. That will not lead to any delusion, negativity. That will not arise misunderstanding and conflicts and argument. So these are the noble qualities. That's why the first one is Supatipanno, of good conduct. It's the order of the enlightened disciple of the blessed one. Then Ujjupatipanno, again repeated. Bhagavato Savaka Sangho. Bhagava is the Buddha. Sangho is the Sangha. Savaka are the enlightened disciple of the Buddha, of the Sangha of the Buddha. So of upright conduct is the order of the enlightened disciple of the Buddha. So just now is very good conduct, Anasana. Their speech, their action, and their thought process, they bring about a lot of well-being, a lot of wholesomeness, a lot of goodness. Then the second one is upright. Upright means they do not compromise. They do not even behave in the slightest inappropriate way, like to deceive or to cheat or to take advantage. Means of upright conduct is the enlightened disciple of the Buddha, the order of the enlightened disciple of the Buddha. So these are the qualities and virtue of the Noble Disciple. So I repeat, first one is of good conduct, Suppatipanno. Then Ujjupatipanno is of upright conduct. The third one is very important, Jnana Patipanno. What is Jnana? Jnana is what? Wisdom, yes. The word Jnana is insight. So Jnana Patipanno. So of wise conduct is the order of the enlightened disciple of the Blessed One. So the third quality is wisdom. They have a lot of wisdom. They are very wise. Very wise in every aspect of life. They understand life clearly. They understand all of nature's law that governs life and existence. And they are so wise. Because of that, they are no longer deluded by what people say and do. They understand clearly the reality of life and existence, the universal characteristics of all phenomena. So these are the third great qualities of the enlightened disciple of the Blessed One. Then the last one is Samichi Patipanno. Bhagavato Savaka Sangha. This last one is also very beautiful. The Buddha said, of dutiful conducts are the enlightened disciples of the Buddha. They are very, very beautiful because they carry out their duty with understanding, meticulously and wisely. Means they know this form and mind, when it comes to this world, it has a duty towards all, towards fellow living beings, towards all of nature, towards the environment, towards everything that exists. Because of that understanding, their nature becomes beautiful. So these are the four great qualities of the enlightened disciple of the Buddha. So I repeat. Suppatipanno is of good conduct. Then Ujjupatipanno is of upright conduct. Then Nyayapatipanno is of wise conduct. Then the last one is Samichipatipanno, which is of dutiful conduct. Means you understand very clearly your right duty. That's why my teacher Achayantra, he is very wise. He always tell me, right duty is right dhamma. But in Thai, he said, right duty is right tamak. Tamak is dhamma. So when you have right duty, you understand the teaching. That's why right duty is right tamak. If you can do your duty well, you are beautiful. That's why I always share with you all that. Even though this form of mind is not you, but you have a duty towards all those that have affinity with your nature, like your loved ones, your children, your parents, your friends, colleagues, and all those things. Whoever who have relationship with you, even the environment, and all things. Through cultivator of the way, we'll understand there is this right duty towards all things. So these are the four important great qualities of the enlightened being, or enlightened disciple of Lord Buddha or Sakyamuni Buddha. Then the next one is Yadidang Chattari Purisa Yugani Atta Purisa Pugala Isa Bhagavato Savaka Sangho. This order of the Blessed Ones, enlightened disciple, namely the four pairs of enlightened beings, the eight type of individual, because there are four stages of enlightenment. You have the first stage of sainthood, the second stage of sainthood, the third stage and the fourth stage, which is the Arahanta. The first stage is Sotapatta. You call it a Sotapanna or Sotapanna. Then Sakadagami, then Anagami, which is the third stage of sainthood. Then you got the Arahanta. Each and every of these enlightened beings, there are two types of individual. If you are just on the path, then you are the path type of enlightened being. Can be first, second, third, or fourth stage of sainthood. Then if you already stabilize everything and develop the clear understanding, then you realize the fruition of it. That's why it's Maga Pala. Maga is path. Pala is fruition. Path and fruition. 2 times 4. 8 types of individual. Then this 8 types of individual, or the 4 pairs of enlightened being, they are worthy of offering, worthy of hospitality, worthy of gift, worthy of reverential salutation, and the field of merits is an incomparable field of merits to the world. That's why you have condition to make offering, to cultivate hospitality, to provide hospitality. Then if you have certain good condition or appropriate condition to make offering and give to all these beings, the field of merits are immeasurable. Then the last one is the simplest. You don't have to give anything. You just only need to have the faith to pay respect mindfully. Reverential salutation. That's why when you take refuge with the Triple Gem, when you pay respect, reverential salutation, is a very, very beautiful meritorious action, one of the 10 meritorious actions. But the field of merits is incomparable, because these are the Triple Gem, especially the fully enlightened one, Sammasambuddha, then the Aryan Sangha, which is the Sangha. Then when you pay respect and reverential salutation to the Dhamma too, it is also one of the Triple Gem. And the field of merits is incomparable. So these are the important understanding, so that when you develop the cultivation, you walk the path of Dhamma, you know how to develop all this field of merits and blessing. You only have to develop this clear understanding and the faith. Then just wherever there is condition, do this. That's why Pusian is very powerful at developing all this. She can simultaneously in one prostration pay respect to all the Buddhas of all the 3 periods of time in all the 10 directions. Yeah, simultaneously, she cultivates until so. She is so special. That's why her vows are very powerful. And she can make offering, just one single offering, to all of the great beings, Buddhas and Bodhisattvas of the 3 periods of time. Yeah. Because they understand the nature's law, they know how to invoke all this. Yeah. So these are the important understanding that you have to develop. The other 2 salutations we have gone through, so that one is easier. Especially salutation to the Dhamma, I have repeated many times. But the Sangha, I realized, very few people understand. That's why today I make use of the opportunity to share this with you. Okay. Is it clear to you? Do you have anything to add or any question that you might want to ask about the salutation to the Sangha? This Sangha is the Aryan Sangha, like the word Savaka. Bhagavato is the Buddha. Savaka are the enlightened, beings. Then Sangho is the Sangha, orders of the monk or community of the enlightened disciple of the Buddha. Any question? No question. Good. Then we can start our Diamond Sutta. Shall we rejoice first with the understanding? Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. So now, at least, for the first time, you have clear understanding of what you are chanting. Salutation to the Sangha. Sangha Vandana. Okay. We turn to page... Is it 19? We were at page 19. We are at the second paragraph. I have to recollect what was the paragraph before, because the words there were interesting. Can a preface really be called either a foreword or a postscript, you might ask? There is nothing fixed about it. Oh, now I know already. The Dhamma is not rigid, remember? Whatever that is fixed is no Buddha Dhamma. This one you must understand. That's why I always share with you all. Wisdom is an understanding, it's not a knowledge. That's why it's not rigid. It's not a fixed rule. It is an understanding. That's why it is always in a state of flux, the reality. You need to have that understanding to accord and flow. And the understanding is not just one aspect, two aspect. It's multi-aspect. The entire understanding of the reality in the here and the now. Because within the here and the now, the condition, the mind rights condition, are impossible to comprehend except by great beings, especially Samasambuddha. But if you are a true cultivator who has developed the cultivation very well, you too can have a very good understanding of the mind right condition behind. That's why understanding condition is true Dhamma. If you cannot understand condition, you have only knowledge, no real Dhamma. The Vajra Sutta Sutra make clear the principle of no fixed Dhamma. I'm on the last paragraph of the page before. When something is fixed upon, the resulting attachment causes obstruction, which in turn leads to affliction. When there is no attachment, emptiness is without affliction. When all is empty, to what can one be attached? What then cannot be put down when one is completely empty of self? What affliction could there be? Affliction comes when one's viewpoint is not empty of self. See? When you hold a view, that becomes obstruction. That's why the Mahayana teaching, Hu Liang Shou Jing, is very good. Suo Zi Zhang. Whatever that you think you know is knowledge, is an obstruction. So this one, affliction comes when one's viewpoint is not empty. You think you know. You got knowledge. That's why Krishna Murti said, the most dangerous living being in this world is the one who say, I know. To the enlightened one, the reality is there is nothing to know. Understand? What is knowing? Knowing comes from the thought. Understand? And the thought is incapable of wisdom or understanding. is capable of a lot of knowledge. Yeah. A lot of all this rigid knowledge. Then I read on. Things have not been seen through smash and put down. Therefore, so the famous quote, wherever you go, you are stuck. Stuck by what? What is written there? Thorns means what? You kena kau kau, wherever you go, no, you are stuck by thorn. Means very painful. When you make mistake, you step on the thorn or a nail or a glass. It can cut you. It can harm you. And this is all mental affliction, not physical. It's metaphorically with it. And wherever you go, you bump into war. War, you know. Cantonese got a very good description. Chong pek. When you bump against the wall. The Cantonese description is good. Chong pek. Hokkien how? Hokkien. Long pia. But not so. The emphasis is not so strong. The Cantonese one I like. Chong pek. Long pia. The meaning doesn't stand out. Understand? So all this is very, very good Dhamma sharing. If you don't want to be stuck by thorn and hit against wall, you better develop wisdom and non-attachment to understanding. Everywhere you go, you walk into wall or get caught in bubbles, and it is painful. That's why life lesson, without wisdom, without the Dhamma, affliction, suffering, they are very real. If you have absolutely no self, no others, no living being, no life, nothing at all, what pain is there? Who has pain? When there is not even a person who feels pain, what affliction can there be? Where would the affliction come from? This is easy to say or talk about, but difficult not to do, to realize. You should change the word difficult to realize. It's not a doing, you cannot do. Okay, then we continue. So this was where we stopped, which was beautiful. The six requirements are called the postscript because they are not part of the original sutta. The Buddha did not say, thus I have heard. That text was added afterwards by Venerable Ananda. When the sutta division was compiled, the postscript is also called the prologue. Therefore, the six requirements may be called the foreword, the prologue, and the postscript. You know, how does this word come about? Thus have I heard. Anybody knows? Why did Ananda use this? How did it arise? No, that time he doesn't know. It's only when the Buddha was about to pass away. Understand not? Because Venerable Anuruddha saw him crying. Ananda weeping. And he asked Ananda, what is happening? He said, our teacher, Sakyamuni Buddha, said, 3 months from now, he will pass away. He will pass into parinibbana. So that's why he was full of grief. Then Anuruddha reprimanded him. He said, you only got 3 months, you're still weeping down here. He said, there are so many questions that we should ask our teacher, Sakyamuni Buddha, before he parinibbana. First thing first, after you are gone, who shall we go to as our teacher? That one he asked. What did the Buddha reply? Dhamma is one part. He said, let the Dhamma and the Vinaya be your teacher. That's why, whatever later on, the Buddha also clarified, there are so many rules they ask him, the precept. What constitute major offense? What are the things that you can do away with? Luckily they asked. But they didn't really have the opportunity to understand clearly what Sakyamuni told them. Sakyamuni only told them some of the minor precepts. If you understand the condition, you can dispense with. But the major precept, the moment the Sangha member offend, you have to disrupt them. These are the major offense. Then later on, Ananda was also told to ask, how shall we address him after he passed away? How shall we record all this teaching? That's why Sakyamuni answered Ananda, he said. He used the word the Tathagata. He never called himself the Buddha then. No. He said the Tathagata means a being that is expert in Tathata or suchness. That's why he is the Tathagata. That's why it comes from that word Tathagata. Tasness of thing. That's why he said you start with this, then they will know this would come from the Tathagata. Thus have I heard. Means Ananda heard when the Buddha was alive. This was what he preached and shared. That's why it is something that you can rely on. Yeah. So this is a brief history, yeah, for the benefit of some of you who may not know. Yeah. Then there are many things that they asked the Buddha to at that time. But it was not really recorded completely. So we only heard of these few things. And I don't have time to read the Tipitaka because my nature don't like to read this type of thing. So if you are free, you got time, you want to read, you go and read. Then tell me some story. After you read and you tell me the story, I will know the meaning deep within. So if some of you have the tendency or affinity to do this, you can go and read or check the internet. Then I can help you to screen which are the correct one and which are the not correct one. Okay, we go on. The Buddha instructed that all sutta he spoke should begin with this foreword, thus have I heard. Here they put the other way around, thus I have heard. Actually it should be thus have I heard. Those who investigate Buddhist sutta should know the history of this foreword. After the Buddha had finished speaking the wonderful Dhamma Lotus Sutta or Lotus Blossom Sutta, this is the Miao Fa Lian Hua Jing, the Nirvana Sutta. Actually, it's the Parinirvana Sutta. The Buddha bequeathed the Teaching Sutta, the Kistigaba Sutta. This one is the Medicine Buddha and others. He announced that he was going to enter Parinirvana. Every one of his disciples cried, Bodhisattvas cried, Arahan cried, and all the bhikkhu and common people cried even harder. You believe this sentence or not? I don't think all cried. Especially the great Bodhisattva and some of the disciples. They already had the wisdom. They were not crying. They will understand. But of course, you have a form of mind. Understand? You can trigger off gratitude, emotion, which are very pure. Your gratitude towards the Buddha. then your love towards the Buddha, you can express it out, because this form and mind has emotion. It is capable of this type of pure emotion or pure feeling. So enlightened being that has true gratitude towards their teacher or towards somebody who has actually helped them in many, many ways, they will have this gratitude. Then they will rejoice. Then they will understand clearly there is no one there. Everything is just condition arising, cause of phenomena. But the form and mind has gratitude. That nature has gratitude towards what happened. So all these are possible. But to say all, he used the word everyone, not all, of his disciples cried. I don't think that is the case. And he even say Bodhisattva cried, Arahat cried, and all the bhikkhu and common people cry even harder. That one I agree. Normal people miss the Buddha so much. Then the next paragraph is beautiful. The deep compassionate Dhamma which the Buddha spoke had been like milk which nourishes them. They had drunk. Oh, this is past tense of drink. They have drank. Had must be drunk. Because the other one, yam zui zhao, also drunk. Same spelling. That's why I want to pronounce as they drank. Otherwise, they had drunk. They get drunk because of the Dhamma. They had drunk the Dhamma for many years. And now their sauce was going to dry up. So they cried. Not like that one. Dhamma is everywhere. The Buddha already said the Dhamma was there before him. Understand not? He only came to realize it and proclaim it to the world. So how can you say the milk dry out? Oh, this is not like mother. When they give birth, after a few months, mother no more milk. The baby milk. This is different. Ananda cried hardest. Oh, tears poured from his eye, while his nose also ran. And he knew nothing but grief. He cried so hard, he forgot everything. The Venerable Anuruddha, though blind, had the heavenly eye and the heavenly ear. When he heard everyone crying, as though they had gone mad, he took Ananda aside and asked, "What are you crying?" "Well, Ananda, the Buddha is going to enter Parinibbana and we will never see him again." "What do you mean? What am I crying about?" The Venerable Anuruddha said, "Don't cry. You still have important things to do. Try to straighten up a little." See, Anuruddha never cried. Ananda said, "What important thing? The Buddha is going to enter Parinibbana. What is left for me to do? I want to go with the Buddha. I want to die with the Buddha." See? Ananda, pity Ananda. Miserable Ananda. "That won't do. It's a mistake to talk like that." "Well, what do you want me to do?" The Venerable Anuruddha said, "There are four questions you should ask the Buddha." Only four questions. "Now that the Buddha is going to enter Parinibbana, how can there still be questions?" Ananda retorted, "I cannot tell the Buddha not to enter Parinibbana, can I?" Anuruddha replied, "No." "What are the four questions then?" The Venerable Anuruddha said, "The first question is, after the Buddha enters Parinibbana, the sutta should be compiled. What word should we use to begin the sutta? See, this is how it come about. What guide should there be? Ananda heard that and said, that's really important. As soon as I heard you say it, I knew I should ask about it. What other question are there? Then Anuruddha said the second question. When the Buddha was in the world, we live with the Buddha. After the Buddha has passed on to extinction or cessation, the word should be cessation. After he has entered Parinibbana, where should we dwell? Ananda dried his eye and wiped his nose and said, that is also very important. When the Buddha was in the world, the entire group of 1250 bhikkhu lived together with him. Now that he is going to enter Parinibbana, wherever they live, I should ask that. Then what is the next question? He was getting anxious because he could see that the questions were important. The third question, when the Buddha was in the world, the Buddha was our teacher or master. Now that he is entering Parinibbana, whom shall we take as teacher or master? We should select one person from among us. We can't manage without a teacher or a master. Ananda said, right. That is also important. That also should be asked. Then what is the fourth question? The fourth question is extremely important. When the Buddha was in the world, he could discipline the evil-natured bhikkhu. Don't use the word bad. Evil-natured bhikkhuni. They call bhikkhu. Evil-natured bhikkhu are those who leave home and do not follow the monk's precepts. After the Buddha enters Parinibbana, who were disciplined? Them. Ananda said, right again. Now, the evil-natured bhikkhu will consider us their equal, and we will not be able to discipline them. That is a real headache. Okay, I will see the Buddha. I will get the Buddha's advice on all this. So Ananda went straight to the Buddha's room. Although he had not washed his face, his eye was dry and his nose clean, and he was not nearly as unsightly as when he had been crying. The Buddha was on the verge of entering Samadhi, and Ananda had no time to waste. Buddha, he said, world-honored one, I had some very important problems about which I need your advice. Can you answer me now? The Buddha already knew that his cousin, the youngest disciple, was coming to ask questions, and he said, certainly, I can answer you. What are your questions or problems? These are my questions and problems. They are the Buddha's problems. Problems of Buddha Dharma, problems of all High Master. I can't resolve them. And so I have come seeking the Buddha's compassionate instruction. I have heard many sutta and opened much wisdom. But now, faced with this momentous moment or event, I can't even handle it. I need your advice, Buddha. All right, speak, said the Buddha. The first question is, after the Buddha enters Parinibbana, we want to compile the sutta. What words shall we begin them with to show that they are the words of the Buddha? The Buddha said, use this four words. Thus have I heard. Thus have I heard. Okay, I will remember, asked Ananda. What's the answer to the second question? Then the Buddha asked, what is the second question? You haven't even asked. It yet, Ananda. Oh, I haven't. He said, oh. The next question is, where should we live? There are so many of us. How will we get along? Where will we dwell? The Buddha said, this is a small problem. You should dwell in the four dwellings. See? What are the four dwellings? What are the four dwellings? Ah, Satipatthana, the four foundation of mindfulness, the book that is about to come out. We are now doing the proofreading. So that one is very important. That's why this is daily mindfulness, heedfulness, understand or not? When you dwell on the four foundation, means you are heedful, you are cultivating the four foundation of mindfulness. You are actually cultivating the whole of his teaching. Because within the four foundation of mindfulness, the last cultivation is cultivation of this mindfulness of the Four Noble Truths. Yeah. That's why the Buddha said this is the only way, ekayano bhikkhave bhikkhu, for the overcoming of sorrow, lamentation, to realize Nibbana. So this is the only way, he told the monk. So the four foundation of mindfulness, they are very, very important. That's why the real meditation is daily mindfulness in this four foundation. Without daily mindfulness, you can never, never awaken. So if you want to really develop the true, clear understanding and awaken to the truth or the teaching that the Buddha has taught you, you have to train your mind to be ever mindful, heedful. Just like Dhammapada verse 21. Heedfulness is the path to the deathless. The heedful never die. Whereas heedlessness is the path to the dead. The heedless are as if dead. So if you don't train your mind to be ever mindful and heedful throughout life, in the midst of life and throughout the day, it is very unlikely that you can cultivate his teaching, his Buddha Dhamma. So heedfulness is the most important. Knowing that, we should strive on with heedfulness as per the advice of the Buddha, to train the mind to be ever mindful, to cultivate this Noble Eightfold Path, which is included under the four foundation of mindfulness. So contemplation of the body as impure, contemplation of feeling as suffering, contemplation of the citta or the thought as impermanent, and contemplation of the Dhamma as devoid of self. This is the simplification by Mahayana tradition. This is not the four foundation of mindfulness. Understand? The four foundation of mindfulness is mindfulness of the kaya, kaya nupassana, then mindfulness of feeling, vedana nupassana, then mindfulness of citta, which is the consciousness and its content, all the mind state, mental states, all of sankhara within, then mindfulness of dhamma. These are the four foundations. But the Mahayana modify it to develop clearer understanding and stress the importance of each particular foundation. But if you understand, actually every foundation serves its purpose, every foundation got its very important purpose, then within every foundation you can realize all these four things. When it comes to the body, they only focus on contemplation of the body as impure. Understand? They always use the word chou pinang. You know what is a pinang? Skin bag. Very filthy. Because this human body is like a filthy skin bag. Understand? You don't wash yourself or clean yourself for even a day or two, you know what happened to you. No? So they always contemplate the body as impure, so that you will not deludedly grasp, cling and attach and be deluded by its beautiful form. When you put a lot of makeup, when you dress, when you clothe it and do all those things, then nowadays you can go and do all those botox and the know what talk. You make yourself like look young, then modify all the shape so that you also can have pretty face. So all this, they are part and parcel of the scientific world. But when you develop Dhamma understanding, when you cultivate, the physical body has a lot of purpose and function. It is meant for you to use as a vehicle to live life, as a sense basis for you to arise consciousness. Then it is also a vehicle for you to cultivate, develop understanding, awaken to the way. Then also a vehicle to help you experience life, live life, understand life, and develop all the important wisdom and virtue that you need for you to be a blessing to all. So this form and mind actually is very important. It has its purpose, it has its function. Then when you truly understand, it can perform its duty too. And it can live. It will not be deluded. It will not go and worry about life. Then this form and mind need not have suffering when you have developed the understanding of the teaching, the Dhamma, the wisdom. So these are important understandings. So it's not just like what the Mahayana only teach you, contemplate the body as impure. That is because they don't want to do away with lust, understand not? Craving for the beautiful form. But you cannot deny that in this world, everything comes with a package, understand? You know what is a package? When you marry as a package, understand? You know what is a package? Good and bad, all you take along, understand? No such thing as, oh, when you are pretty, when you are young, you still serve a purpose. Means financially you are still able to support and provide for others. They are then, I marry you or I love you. But marriage comes as a package, understand? When everything go your way, if both have understanding, then marriage has its meaning, because it is a very important marriage contract. When you understand the importance of that marriage contract and you know how to develop the sincerity of it so that you can support each other and benefit each other without hurting and taking advantage of each other, then that relationship becomes beautiful. It has meaning. It will serve you well and you will have beautiful family unit, beautiful relationship and beautiful life. But if one of you is selfish, and the worst is both are selfish, then there can be a lot of complication, a lot of affliction. Then like just now earlier on, the verse say, you are very rigid, you have your views, your opinion, and your way. What happened? Every time bang against the wall, every time hit all the thorn and the pain. That's how suffering comes about. And it comes as a package, is because good and bad, you have to accept that reality. That's why you have this, what they call relationship, to care for each other, support each other, then have contentment, gratitude, respect for each other. If everything also you want to compare, argue, and do all those calculations, selfish approach to everything, then it becomes different. There is no more true relationship, true understanding, no more give and take, no more genuine sincerity to commit yourself to such a relationship. So life is like that. Everything comes as a package, even our human body and mind. come as a package. That's why the Buddha said the reality of life existence. When you are born into this world, you have your childhood. Then as you grow up, you go to school. Then you work, career phase. Then after that, you retire, or you don't have that fortune, you don't retire, you work until you die. So you will go through old age, sickness and death, starting with birth, of course. So everything comes as a package. You have your period, your phase, your time. So don't waste it, understand? As you go through every moment, every instant, every phase of your life, live it well, because moment to moment, it will slip away. And very soon, old age, sickness and death will catch up. But when you have the Dhamma, when you understand who you are, what you are, then it's a different scenario entirely. You don't have to be afflicted by what happened. The reality of life and existence will have no problem as far as you are concerned. You can confront them with wisdom and understanding, and you can still have the good life, the happy life, the beautiful life, the meaningful life. And all these are possible within life. You only need to develop the Buddha Dhamma understanding that can allow you to understand life clearly, to understand the secret of life, so that you know how to live life. And these are very beautiful. Okay? So, not necessary contemplate only the negative aspect of this form. Form has its meaning. It's like every time I read about this, I realize the Mahayana teaching, they teach differently, because I can understand them because they are cultivated all the way. They just want to emphasize on this. You must contemplate the body as impure so that you got no craving, no lust, so that you won't fall into that delusion. Of course, that one has its point. But the true Dhamma is not like that, understand? You cannot just contemplate it as impure. Then you develop what? What? Aversion towards that form, understand? Beautiful form also cannot look, cannot appreciate, cannot love. Like good food also cannot eat. Not like that, the Dhamma, understand? But if you look already got lust, that one you have to cultivate heedfulness and mindfulness, understand? But when you understand them for what they are, these are condition arising phenomena. Just like good food. When there is condition for good food, you can afford it. When you have the means or people offer it to you, then you can eat it. But do not develop the craving. When there is no more condition to have, also you ngay lai and want it, cannot. So Cantonese is kak ngang le. How many people can do it? Oh, that's a good question. We ask Kayamita. Kayamita, a lot of them can do it, I tell you. You will be very surprised. Nowadays, Kayamita is different from last time. The last 2 years, a lot has transformed. And there are many who are very quiet, diligently cultivating. And they understand. Although maybe not fully stable, but deep inside, they have the understanding. And quite a number actually penetrated. That's why I got a lot of joy, especially last year, the 10th anniversary. There was so much joy. Just to see the Kayamita progressing, transforming. Then this year, it even more fantastic, accelerated so fast. Now it's only August. So much thing has happened. Only the cultivator of the way they will understand. That's why the Buddha Dhamma is very, very beautiful. When it touches your nature, your heart, when you connect back, you become so beautiful. And overnight you transform. Overnight you understand, like the sudden teaching. That's why you must listen to the Sunday talk. Wu Ping Qing Sutta, the Six Platform Sutta, or the Hui Ning one. Because his is the direct teaching. He take you direct to the true mind, your true nature, your self nature. That's why Alicia like that talk so much. He always say, wow. Just like when Hui Ning heard from the fifth patriarch and become greatly enlightened. You know what he heard? When the fifth patriarch expounded the Diamond Sutta and came to that part, you must know how to use the mind and yet not deluded by it. You understand? Huh? He knew there are two types of mind. One is the mundane mind condition, right? That one is for you to use. That's why I always tell you all, this form of mind is a vehicle and a tool for you to come to this world to use. That's why I make full use of them. It is not you. Do not be deluded by what you see, what you perceive. So that part is very important. You must know how to use it and yet not afflicted by it, not deluded by it. Then the sixth patriarch, great awakening. Why? Because he realized that this one is not the true mind. That's why later on he added, actually the fifth patriarch already explained to him, he already had the understanding because his mind, his nature was like that. He was born without a mundane mind. He was always with his true mind. That's why he only need a few pointer for people to explain to him. It's just like before you all received that green book, before I gave that talk. Actually, I've been explaining the five aggregate form and mind for the last 10 over years. But it is not until recently when the book came out, the Thursday class sharing, somebody did the transcript, then it become written. Then only you all start to have a better understanding of who you are, what you are. In that book, I explain very clearly, exactly like what the fifth patriarch explained to Hui Ning, but in much more detail and more clarity some more. That's why Hui Ning later on told the fifth patriarch how amazing the Buddha Dhamma is. Never realized that self-nature originally was already perfect. Then nothing is apart from the self-nature. All Dhamma arise from that self-nature. That's why Alicia, because of her condition, she can understand all this. And it was so beautiful to her. And she really, really had a lot of joy. So much joy. And that word was so powerful, so penetrative. And everything is like so clear. That's why the moment you understand, you understand. Even a few others do. Here you have at least two or three. So many of these can arise if you're really serious about the cultivation. If you can develop the daily mindfulness, the contemplative wisdom, you listen to the Dhamma, straighten your view, then cultivate, silence your mind. Don't try to know. Then everything will unfold and you will understand. Okay? So just now, how did we come to here? We were on the contemplation of body, right? Oh, come as a package. Then after that, what happened? The form of mind. Now we go to the next one. Contemplation of feeling as suffering. See? They are only interested in all this. Because the Mandarin has a way of putting it. To them, the body is the source of suffering. Actually, the body is not the source of suffering. The body is just a physical thing. Understand? It has got no knowing. It is the mind that is deluded attach and cling onto this body is the cause of suffering. That's why the Buddha, under the final summary, the five aggregates of grasping, upadana khandas, is dukkha. So body is not the source of suffering. It's like you say, money is the source of all evil, or root of all evil. No, it depends on the user. That's why the user, the form and mind, the consciousness that is trapped within that form and mind, if it's not deluded, this form and mind will have no suffering, no affliction. But when there is delusion, then this form and mind that is deluded will grasp whole and cling. That's how suffering comes to be. So when feeling arise, if you don't know feeling is condition arising, causal phenomena, then you attach and cling and grasp, thinking that feeling is you. That's how suffering arise. So when they contemplate feeling as suffering, they just want you to develop that clarity that when there is feeling, if you grasp and cling, it will arise suffering. Feeling itself is not suffering, understand not? Understand not? Don't be deluded by what is written here. He said contemplate feeling as suffering. He never said feeling is suffering, understand not? Contemplate feeling is suffering. Feeling as suffering means whenever feeling arise, you have to be mindful, heedful. But the moment you attach and cling means what? Positive and negative feeling. That's why you got pleasant and unpleasant feeling. Even neutral feeling. Neutral feeling born of delusion is also an evil root. Sensual desire and ill will, pleasant and unpleasant, are the evil roots of greed and hatred. And they are also part of the first two, five mental hindrances. That's why the moment you react or stir upon contact, when feeling arise through your wrong view and your conditioned mind, suffering will arise. So all this is Mahayana skillful means to actually develop the training. But everything within the four foundations, they exhibit the three characteristics. Understand that? It's not just feeling you can contemplate as suffering. Feeling you can also contemplate as impermanent, understand that? And non-self. That's why they are all there. But the emphasis is different because their teaching, they like to do it this way. Then the third one, they say, contemplate the citta or the thought as impermanent. But actually, all the three characteristics are there within every and each and all of this foundation. Then the last one is contemplate Dhamma as devoid of self or empty. Actually, the Dhamma is just the Dhamma. So it has its universal characteristic. That's why there are these characteristics of impermanent. The moment you grasp and cling and hold on to the Dhamma rigidly or tenaciously, suffering will arise. That's why the three characteristics, they are all there. Oh, 10:10, I have to end. Today I have to stop earlier, 10:15, because tomorrow I got to take a flight, early morning flight to Singapore. I'll be back on Thursday in time for the Thursday class, don't worry. My flight back is Thursday afternoon. I should reach here by 4-5 o'clock. Okay, we continue. The third question. You have been our master, but when you enter Parinibbana, who will be our master? Will it be the oldest, means Venerable Kashyapa, or the great Kassapa? Or will it be someone middle-aged? That would be Kondanya. If it is so, or if it is to be the youngest, Ananda say, I'm the youngest. But I can't be the master. I can't do it. He told the Buddha that he knew he don't have that ability. The Buddha said, you don't need to be master, and neither does Kondanya or great Mahakasapa. Who will it be then? Ananda asked. The Buddha said, take the Patimokkha. Patimokkha is the Vinaya, as your master. This Patimokkha is the Vinaya, the precept and the rules. Take the precepts and the rules as your master. Actually, in the Theravada, the Dhamma and Vinaya, both, the Buddha said. Then the Buddha even asked them to check. Whenever you have a doubt or a dispute, is it? Whether this teaching comes from the Buddha or not, is it? You check the sutta, the Dhamma. If it's in the sutta and it's in the Vinaya, the monk's precept or discipline, then it's definitely from the Buddha, understand? But some of them interpret it differently. You know? They say it must be from both, only the Buddha. The Buddha never answered like that. The Buddha said if it can be found in both, then it's definitely his teaching. So a lot of this, no need to argue with people. More important is, the Buddha said the Dhamma is Pachetang. Pachetang means what? Can be realized by the wise, each for themselves. That's why you just cultivate until one day you become the wise one. Then no need to argue. Whatever Dhamma, that's why you can tell people. You won't know one is not the real one. Because nothing inside there. When it go in, it doesn't Pachetang. Cannot be realized by the wise one. The wise one listen already like, not like that one. So all this, you will develop the ability if you cultivate sincerely. Then we go on. The Buddha said that all people who had gone forth from home should take the Patimokkha as their master. Therefore, if you want to leave home, leave the home life, you certainly must receive the precept. If you do not receive the precept, then you have got no master. When one leaves home, he should receive the Samanera precept, the Bodhisatta precept, and the Bhikkhu's precepts. One who has taken only the Samanera precept and the Bodhisatta precepts, but has not taken the Bhikkhu precept, has only partially left home. He left home fully. To leave home fully, one must take the complete precept as master. Now we have a master, Ananda said. But among us, there are evil-natured bhikkhu. While you have been in the world, you have managed them. What should we do about them when you are gone? During the time of the Buddha, there were 6 bhikkhu who were very rambunctious. Means very naughty. Rambunctious. This English word very powerful. I also don't understand. They constantly interfere. Now they explain. With others' cultivation. If people were maintaining the precepts and rules, those bhikkhu tried to hinder them. Although those 6 bhikkhu did not follow the rule, not one of them was so disobedient as today's average bhikkhu. Wow, that one really kau-kau. He really comment on the present civilization monks. He say even these 6 at the time of the Buddha very, very unacceptable. Really. But compared to a lot of modern day monks, he say they are really very good. Not one of them was as disobedient as today's average bhikkhu. What should we do about evil nature? Here he used the right word. There's an evil nature bhikkhu, asked Ananda. Oh, that one, said the Buddha, is very easy. You should be silent and they will go away. See? Don't argue with them. Understand? They want to be right, let them be right. Understand? Just let things be. Accept them for what they are. Then you are beautiful. Otherwise, you kipo. You say, hey, the Buddha not around. You don't try to be funny. Then later on, you will go and argue with people. So all this, even your teacher no more around, don't go and argue with people. Understand? Like Sakyamuni Buddha, same, is it? Silent, no need to do anything. Don't talk to them. After all, aren't they? He used the word bad. Aren't they evil? Aren't they boisterous and disobedient? That's why he say, let them be. Don't ignore them. Let them be. Don't speak to them. They will become bald and live on their own. This is from the understanding of what? It takes two hands to clap, understand? To make the sound, understand? If one hand doesn't clap, then there is no sound, understand? So let them do what they like. And when they cannot have anything to do out of what they do, they will go away, understand? When they cannot make fun of you, and when you are not the type of one that can be like disturbed, if they step on your tail, you jump, that one they like to come after you, because very easy, understand? So these are the things that you need to develop understanding. When there is condition, then only you manifest. When there is no condition, just let things be. Avoid unnecessary misunderstanding, negativity and conflict. You can radiate love and metta, no problem. Then you just let things be. Then like Sabha Asavak Sutta say, there are things that you need to avoid. Understand? This is one of the things, the heedless. The one that don't have the Dhamma. The heedless. The unwise. Deluded. That's why you make aspiration to avoid all this. And now realize God like that, Ananda still going to ask questions. You make aspiration, then you don't know how to apply. You somehow go and complain to the Buddha. So the Buddha say very simple. Actually, if the Buddha really answered that way, it will be beautiful. You all can learn more. You make the aspiration and you don't know how to avoid all these people. They have been foolish. So this is very good. They will become bald and live on their own. Okay? Those are the Buddha's answer to the four questions. So at one time, refer to the time when the Buddha was staying in Sarvati. Sarvati was the name of the capital city which housed King Pasenadi, translated as flourishing virtue. Flourishing referred to the five desire form. These are the sense data, form, sound, sense, flavor and tangible object, and to the wealth which abound in the country. Virtue refers to the conduct of the citizen who were well educated and free from vexation. Okay, we stop here. The rest you all can go back and read a bit. Okay. If you got any question, maybe next Tuesday class.